This episode is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Wisconsin cheesemakers produce over 600 varieties, types, and styles of cheese. That's twice as much as any other state. Learn more about Wisconsin's cheesemaking history at wisconsincheese.com.
I'm Alex McCreary, and I'm half of Opening Soon. My partner, Jenny Goodman, is not with us today, unfortunately. But today we're broadcasting live from the HRN Podcast Lounge at Feast Portland. We want to thank our supporters at Le Creuset, Travel Portland, Salt and Straw, as well as the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage possible. If you don't already know who we are, we have a show called Opening Soon that is all about walking you through the steps of opening a restaurant. We do that because we ourselves had a failed restaurant that lasted about 6 months. And so we chat with people that have done a really good job and found success through every part of whether it's creating a business plan to finding financing to then opening the doors of your restaurant. And our first episode just aired for the second season this past Tuesday, where we talked to Camilla Marcus, who has Westbourne in New York City. And that was a conversation about financing as well, but more the traditional route of finding investors. And today we're chatting with Maya Lovelace from May here in Portland, as well as Yonder. And she, if you don't already know who Maya is, she was an Eater Young Gun, Eater Portland Chef of the Year in 2016, Zagat National 30 Under 30 in 17, James Beard Rising Star semifinalist in 2017 and 18, as well as a Star Chef's Rising Star in 18. That's a lot of accolades under your belt.
Thank you.
Congrats.
Thank you.
And her restaurants, Yonder and May, draw on her family heritage in Appalachia. Yonder hits on Southern classics, while May is a refined approach through a tasting menu that's personally delivered by you yourself, right?
Absolutely.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
So I'm really excited to hear kind of the other side of the story. You know, I kind of think of it as like a scrappier approach to raising funds for a restaurant than what we talked about last week. Tell me a little bit about, you guys started a pop-up about 4 years ago in a garage.
Yeah. We started the pop-up in March of 2015, which is crazy to even think about now. But we basically started it just thinking it would be a one-off thing, sort of a tribute project to my grandmother, May. And I was like, cool, I want to do a dinner that's inspired by her table. Like, the fact that she would bring out, you know, 10 dishes at once, basically, to feed a family of four. And it was ridiculous and over the top and always left you overstuffed, but, like, very emotionally satisfied. So we started out with the idea of just doing that one time, like a fun one-off thing. And then the response was big enough that we started doing it once a month, and then once every 2 weeks, once every week, up to four times a week. Wow. So it really just kind of snowballed into this thing that we were never really, you know, headed towards.
Were you doing it in the garage every time?
Whose garage
was this?
It was the garage of a restaurant called Old Salt Marketplace, which unfortunately closed last year. But we actually opened, I think, a block away from where we originally started the pop-up.
The current location of Yonder's?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, right on Northeast 42nd Avenue. So, yeah, we did the pop-up in the garage for 3 years, and then we moved on to a wine bar called Dame in Northeast and finished out our 10 years of pop-up there.
And was the goal with the pop-up, was it always that would lead into then the current restaurant today?
Absolutely not. I honestly just kind of wanted to take the pop-up thing as far as I could because it was, you know, really great work-life balance. Like, right. We would work really long days, but we had guaranteed days off, you know, plenty of time to be creative and, you know, have this process of coming up with a new 10-course menu every week or whatever.
Right.
So we kind of just wanted to do that as long as we could. And eventually it got to the point where we weren't satisfying the demand. There were too many people that wanted to come.
Good problems to have.
What did you say?
So these are good problems to have
good
when there's
problems
too
to
many
have.
People that want to come to your restaurant.
Good problems to have for sure. And it was really nice, but it's hard for me to let people be frustrated by not being able to, you know, access something. So we wanted to make a version of May that was more accessible to everyone, which is why we opened Yonder.
I got it.
Yeah.
Interesting. So the demand, you were basically like just satisfying people by, you had to have a concrete store.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we kind of let everything grow really organically based on the demand that people gave us. You
and
know?
How long ago was that this like moment came where you were like, this is not functional anymore, we have to have a space?
Probably a year and a half ago, I want to say. Okay. Maybe two years ago.
And up to that point, had you raised money or had you saved money that would be then translated into the build out for the current project?
We had some money in the bank. We were really fortunate operating this pop-up that we were able to, you know, save up about $100,000.
That's great.
After being able to, like, you know, pay our staff and take care of everything. So we were lucky to have kind of like a little nest egg where right. we could get started. Yeah.
What did, if you don't mind talking about the finances of the business plan, you've decided that you need to open it. You've created a business plan.
Yep.
Calls for X amount of dollars.
Yep.
I'm guessing it wasn't $100,000.
No.
To start a new restaurant in Portland.
No.
So what... Then what goes through your mind? Like, how am I going to get the rest of the money? What are you thinking at this point?
Yeah. So when we first were thinking about doing this, we were like, oh, we can totally open a restaurant for $250,000. We were like, right. definitely. We can do a build out. We'll find a space. It'll be great. We're going to do it, you know, super like, not like sleek, but just enough.
Minimalist.
Like it didn't have to, minimalist.
Right.
Yeah. We were like, we'll just make fried chicken and it'll be a fried chicken counter and people will
people
come.
People don't need chairs. They can just stand up and fine. Save
we
the
were
money.
Like, we'll just get really cheap chairs. It'll be fine. $250,000. Obviously, that is not the amount of money that it costs to build
right.
a restaurant from scratch.
Did you figure that part out?
Like halfway out? Through the process, basically.
How did you realize, just from adding things up in the business plan,
yeah.
or did you talk to someone? Did you have a consultant that said
no,
you're crazy?
Just adding things up in the business plan. My partner Zach and I have done a lot of math with a lot of scary numbers over
right.
the last like 2 years. But basically, we were like, yeah, we can do this for $250. We have $100 in the bank. Let's try to get some small loans from people that we love, like our friends and family who have been fans of the pop-up and have been coming in. So we reached out and we got some money from those people, and we were like, cool. Now we can get started. Now
right.
we can start, you know, filing for our permits, or we can hire an interior designer or whatever. So then obviously you think, oh, an interior designer. Oh, cool. We need somebody to do our branding. Oh, cool. We're going to have to
How
buy furniture. Oh, cool. We need a really fancy fryer so that we can make fried chicken all day, every day.
Right.
And everything just kind of like snowballs.
You need venting to take all that extra fry smell out of the
yeah,
restaurant.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So obviously things got more and more expensive.
Right.
So after we got a round of loans from the people that we love, we then moved into the idea of doing a Kickstarter and doing crowdfunding.
Okay.
Yeah.
Tell us about how that started. And I looked at the campaign. It's still live. You can kind of see.
Yeah.
And I think it's really interesting. There's a lot of different things that you guys offer it in exchange, because the way Kickstarter works is that you offer all these incentives for people to give you money, and then you'll then repay them at some point once your business goes live if you reach that target goal amount.
Right.
So tell me, one, how did you decide the target goal amount? How freaked out were you by hitting that target goal amount? And what kind of things did you offer? And like,
yeah, we initially wanted to go for 50,000. Which my partner Zach was like, whoa, that's pushing it. That's way too much money. Like, we should go for 35. And I was like, no, I think we should go for 50. And then we had friends that were like, you should go for 75. Go for 75. Just push it. Whatever. It's fine. Something that I think a lot of people don't realize is that when a lot of businesses do a Kickstarter to get going, they have the money that they need in the bank to be able to like pay that last big chunk.
Right. Or,
it's kinda
or
like this,
a friend, family person that's
exactly.
willing to give you that last
chunk. You always
chunk.
Have a bailout plan. So
right.
people were like, cool, like shoot for 75. If you only make 50, you can just throw 25 in there somehow and you can make it happen.
Did you have that bailout plan?
We had the 100 in the bank.
Okay.
You know what I mean? I really didn't want to do that because I think it's weird, and obviously spending your own money to get money is
weird. What's also like a little bit misleading to the Kickstarter audience.
I think so, yeah. Yeah, and I didn't realize at the time that was kind of the norm for Kickstarters. But now you all know. Hopefully I don't get like a nasty email from somebody at Kickstarter.
Kickstarter's
Sorry,
not
everybody.
Listening today.
I
no
love
worries.
You, Kickstarter. So yeah, basically we decided to do it. And we were like, cool, we're going to do this. We're going to try to raise $75,000 and we'll see what happens. And it was like the most gut-wrenching, miserable month probably.
Because crowdfunding sounds super exciting and super
yeah.
like, you know, accessible, but then it's got to be the ultimate way of really putting yourself out there.
It is. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I remember the day that our Kickstarter launched, I actually got a text message from a restaurateur here in Portland who will remain anonymous that said, Kickstarter is for kids with cancer, not chefs who can go out and earn their own money with their God-given talent.
Wow.
And I wanted to be like, that's actually GoFundMe, so thank you very much. But Kickstarter's for businesses, right. But I didn't go there. But yeah, it was really funny, you know, putting ourselves out there and immediately getting like that weird thing from somewhere else in our industry. And we were like, that's weird. Like, why so aggressive? And then from there, it was just kind of this daily thing where it was like, I would wake up and the first thing I would do was check that number. And then throughout the day, every time I had a spare second, I'd just refresh it on my phone. And it got to the point where my partner and I had to like put down our phones somewhere so that we wouldn't just panic and keep refreshing the screen. It was really weird, a really weird experience feeling so attached to that number and just kind of like, are we going to make it?
How long did you guys have? Because every Kickstarter has a window until you raise the amount of money, right? Is it set or you get to choose with that?
You get to choose. We heard from people that 30 days was the best amount of time to do it. So we did it for 30 days. And I think we hit our target the day before the end of our campaign or maybe 2 days before. It was like a blur for me.
And you went a little beyond, right? You guys raised 85.
Yeah, we got 85 in the end, which means that, you know, once Kickstarter takes their share, you end up with like 75.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. So, and then you guys offered everything from a basket of chicken,
yeah.
which is really cool. I would have certainly invested had I lived close enough to get your basket of chicken.
For sure.
Nice. To like a $10,000 restaurant buyout. How did you see people, I'm sure more people bought the baskets, but how did you see people responding to the offerings that you put out?
I think that the responses were pretty good. We tried to offer a really nice array of things at lots of different price points. So it was like, you know, you could get a little enamel pin with our drumstick logo on it. Or like you said, you could get, you know, a restaurant buyout, or you could get, you know, us coming and cooking at your house, kind of like the old pop-up days.
Did any takers on that?
Yeah.
That's
one.
Cool.
Yeah. And, you know, in between we had, you know, like a winemaker dinner. We did a recipe testing dinner so that people would get kind of a first glimpse at what the menu of Yonder was going to be like. So we tried really hard to make sure that the people who loved us could find a way to afford to support us.
Right.
Yeah.
And how I think another, you know, another test of, you know, what Kickstarter is being stressed about delivering once you've now accepted all this money.
Yeah.
You're going to open your restaurant.
Right.
You've got finite amount of funds left to sort of get you through the opening days, months, much longer than what most people anticipate. It usually takes at least 6 to 9 months to become stable financially. How do you then like go to giving away all this free fried chicken or free dinners in the first year? How did you...
So it ended up actually being super weird for us because our restaurant ended up being delayed by a full year. So we did this Kickstarter and we were like, cool, we'll have these things to you in like 3 months. And then it turned out to be a year and 3 months. Or honestly, we still have a dinner we haven't even done yet. Like, that's where we are. It's like, sorry to everyone who backed the vegetarian dinner. I swear we're going to do it before tomatoes go out of season. But like... we are still kind of like picking up those pieces. We tried to get all the, you know, really immediate material things out, like people who bought tote bags and pins and, you know, got a basket of biscuits with pimento cheese. Like, we tried to get all of those things sent out, and it's really just been kind of like trying to open the restaurant, trying to make it run, and trying to kind of fulfill all these rewards.
Yeah.
It's a lot.
Or have people been receptive and understanding of, like, obviously you're a brand new business, or are people like, hey,
for the most part, we've had a couple people write us emails and threaten to sue us.
Over their fried chicken basket.
Yeah. People are real weird, y'all. People are really weird. That's another thing about crowdfunding is that you're not only opening yourself up to, like, weird ridicule, you're also opening yourself up to people who have access to make crazy demands from you. So it's, really intense experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, not to like complain. Like, I'm very, very happy that we did it. I'm very happy that we are where we are. But I want to be really open and honest about that for all of you who are out there maybe thinking about doing crowdfunding. Make sure you are emotionally prepared.
There's a lot that comes with it. It's not just, you know, you don't just get the funds to live in your bank and everybody goes away and says thank you so much.
They're there. Yeah. They're there forever.
but I think for the most part, people probably did it because they either had been to your dinners or like understood how great your food was and how amazing you are yourself, and probably as an investment in you personally.
Yeah.
Were you surprised by the amount of support? Do you know how many backers?
Oh God, it was over, over 600.
That's a good chunk of people.
It was a lot of people. Yeah. And I mean, honestly, it was really, validating in a way.
For sure.
Because, you know, you kind of put this wild idea out where you're like, cool, give us money, I guess. And then when people actually show up, you know, you can see the list of backers too. And it's like, oh my God, like my high school English teacher, like, thank you. And, you know, things like that, where you just see all these people pop up and you're like, wow, like I am a part of this community. I do feel supported by this community. These people do want us to open this restaurant. Like, Portland wants us to be here.
Right. And you have a media customer base built in. So there's definitely a lot of pluses to it.
Yeah, for sure.
Would you do it again? Kickstarter?
I would.
Yeah.
Because it let us get where we are. And I'm just happy that we have a restaurant that's open and we can serve people our food and tell our story, you know?
So Kickstarter, you raised 85 grand.
Yep.
You had 100 grand from pop-ups.
Yep.
185 grand is still not enough to open a restaurant.
It's true.
What did you do?
We ended up actually taking on a couple of partners. We have two partners in the restaurant, both people that we knew, people that we loved already, which I think is really crucial. A lot of people ask me how to find the right partner. And we courted a few people that had a ton of money, but that we didn't necessarily feel like we could ride into the sunset with. That's kind of how somebody described it. Like, when you're taking on a partner, that's somebody you want to ride off into the sunset with. That's like your person. They're like attached to you for the tenure of this restaurant being open.
Yeah, so, it's definitely, we talked about this a little bit last week. It's,
yeah.
You have to both have the same vision for where you want to be.
It's true.
With the restaurant 10 years, 20 years.
Yeah.
It's pretty important.
It's a lot. So yeah, we ended up finding these really great people, one of whom actually was our host for the last 6 months of the pop-up being open, a really wonderful woman named Jane Smith, who owns a restaurant called Dame in Northeast Portland, little wine bar. So yeah, she was hosting us as a pop-up, just as I think a way to get a little extra, you know, cash. And she fell in love with what we were doing and she believed in us. So she came to us and she was like, I was thinking about buying a house, but instead maybe I'll help you open this restaurant. And that was a huge vote of confidence, you know. And then we had a couple of folks who had been coming to our pop-up since basically the beginning. A guy who is basically like a father figure to me at this point, who grew up in Eastern North Carolina, pretty close to me, started picking tobacco as his first job when he was 5 years old. Like, hardworking dude who has gotten to a point in his life where he can afford to, you know, buy into something that he really believes in. So he and his wife are our other partners.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you think that they were influenced by the Kickstarter support at all?
I think that they might have been. I think that it, you know, they saw it as something that, you know, had support. And then the fact that we were also able to come to the table with that money,
right,
as well as our little nest egg that we had saved up.
Right.
You know, we had skin in the game as well. Like, we weren't just saying, give us your money, we're going to run with it, and hopefully we'll do something successful. We were like, we're also investing in this personally.
It's definitely a big thing that investors look for, I think, is to see that you're taking the risk beyond, obviously, the time, sweat equity that you're putting into it, but that you're financially taking the risk yourself, which is pretty daunting for a chef. And you know, I'm sure most people know, but chefs don't make a ton of money when they're in restaurants. So
it's true.
The idea of saving up $100,000 within less than 15 years as a chef is pretty remarkable.
Yeah.
Kudos for getting that done.
Thank you.
When did you guys open the doors 6 months ago, right?
We did, yeah.
So this was like a 4.5 year process.
Yeah.
That's a long story.
It's a long story.
We feel good now?
Yeah.
We're up and moving.
Yeah, it feels good. We're up and moving. We're doing the thing. We're just trying to kind of, you know, keep it afloat now and prove to all these people who were kind enough to invest in us and believe in us that we can do it and we can do it well and we can be there for them the way that we should.
So. And May is the component that's a tasting menu that just opened like 6 weeks ago. Is that right?
Like a month ago. Basically, which is crazy. Oh, yeah, 6 weeks. You're right.
Okay.
I can't tell. I don't know time. Time, whatever. But yeah, we started doing those dinners, 6 weeks ago. And that's three nights a week, 24 people. It's a super intimate 10-course Appalachian tasting menu. It's really, really fun. So y'all should come. It's great.
We talked about this a little bit again last week as well. What are some resources for finding capital? I think it was interesting to learn in our show that most investors are fairly hyper local. They want clearly you're not making tons of money. This is not the best investment in the world.
Right.
You're investing for other reasons. You're investing because you want a great place to go.
Yeah.
You believe in the person that's doing it. And as opposed to some other investments, this is a steady stream of small revenue. You do get payouts and dividends come every 6 months or so.
Yeah.
Any thoughts of resources that you would advise other young entrepreneurial chefs on how to find money?
I mean, honestly, I can say for us, the most important thing going in was that we had established a name, was that we had a proof of concept already for years. I think that that really got us ahead. So I think it's really important to make sure that you have something to kind of like back up your story with, right?
It's legitimized.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's really easy now for chefs to kind of build a portfolio, right, of dishes that you've made, of places where you've worked. It's, you know, the era of Instagram. So I think it's really important to kind of have this backlog of like, look what I can do. Obviously, if you have achievements along the line, awards and things like that, it's really great to be able to show those to folks as well. I found in my experience that when I was looking for resources, looking for ways to, you know, borrow money, it's really, really difficult because banks don't want to give money to a restaurant, period.
You don't have any bank loans, any debt taken outside of investors?
No, just our investors. We actually went to try to get an equipment loan. Everybody was like, equipment loans are super easy because you say, here's the list of equipment we want, and then the equipment is the collateral for the loan. So they'll just give it to you. It's great. That is not the case. At least it wasn't for us. We went to a bank and we were like, can we get an equipment loan? And they were like, absolutely not. So it's kind of a funny thing, right? And then there are lots of places, like organizations that intentionally lend to restaurants. And they're like, yes, we will lend to you. It's wonderful. Interest rate, 13%.
Crazy interest rates, yeah. A lot of them will do direct, will directly take out of your credit card processor too.
Yep.
So,
yep.
I think that's definitely a cautionary tale, is to be wary of those interest rates, because if you start breaking down what your earnings will be in the first 6 months, taking that big chunk of money out, not just the first 6 months, but for the lifetime of that product loan that you took, it
really
can be pretty
scary.
Can hit you hard, for sure.
But yeah, so I would say basically the most important thing, or the best avenue that we found for finding money, was building community support. So it's like, whether it came from building that nest egg or whether, you know, it was the Kickstarter, it was all about support that we had built up in the community.
I mean, that also probably gives you a great opening day audience already pre-built in, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Most restaurants open the door and everybody has to find out from it at that point, right?
Yeah,
you have to have a PR agency pitching consistently.
Right.
You already had at least 600-700 people that knew about what you were doing.
Yeah,
I'm sure there were many more.
We had 10,000 people on our mailing list when we opened the restaurant.
That's a good way to start.
We had a good head start, for sure.
Okay. We always do on our show, we'll do like a lightning round at the end.
Ooh.
So like some quick questions.
Very exciting.
You can elaborate if you want. But number one is favorite dish on the May menu right now. Is it consistent
May,
or does it always change on May?
What? The menu?
Yeah.
The menu changes every 2 weeks.
Every 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Okay, basically, so right now, favorite dish.
Right now, favorite dish on the menu. We have this really delicious toast we're making with salt rising bread, which is an old school Appalachian bread. It's bacterially risen, so you make this crazy starter with potatoes and cornmeal and milk. You have to keep it warm overnight, and then you have to add flour to it and see if it's alive, and then you have to turn it into a loaf of bread if it's alive. But it's this really great bread that tastes like cheese and has this really crunchy texture when you toast it. It is super delicious. So we have this toast, and on top of that, buttermilk ricotta that we make in-house with dill and chive. On top of that, really gorgeous, fatty, rich trout cured with our house-made hominy miso and then smoked. And then a little bit of cucumber and hominy made with Jimmy Red Corn from Anson Mills.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
We talked about the bread a little bit earlier. We're going to rebrand it, call it Granny Bread.
Granny Bread.
We're going to help distribute it, and it's going to be the next big thing.
It's going to be incredible. 50% failure rate on that bread. It's really, really...
We'll have a Kickstarter campaign. It's going to be amazing.
Yes.
Since the mid-1800s, before Wisconsin was even recognized as a state, its resident cheesemakers have been putting the art into artisan cheese. When early settlers from Switzerland, Germany, and Italy came to Wisconsin, they brought their cheesemaking expertise with them. They chose Wisconsin because the terroir reminded them of the homes they'd left behind in Northern Europe. The soil and water of Wisconsin is nurtured by the goodness of glacial sediment, and those elements lend themselves to the very best milk. Today, Wisconsin's cheesemakers draw from their rich European heritage and cheesemaking traditions, and combine them with incredible innovation to produce half of the nation's specialty cheese. Wisconsin cheesemakers never stop experimenting, trying to improve, and dreaming of your next favorite cheese that has yet to be imagined. Learn more about Wisconsin's cheesemaking history at wisconsincheese.com.
Favorite business book? Did you have a business book that you
liked? Favorite business book? Yeah, I'm going to totally blank on the author here, but there is a book called Radical Candor that is really, really phenomenal. It's basically just about how to be a good boss and be an honest, truthful boss and creating a culture of openness and honesty in your business, which is something that we're trying to do at Yonder at May. And it's real hard, y'all, but it's really, really, really important. Yeah.
Cool. Would you recommend the path you chose for startup to other ambitious operators?
Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Mentor, inspirational leader in the hospitality industry.
Oh my God. I have a lot of mentors.
Just one.
Oh, Jesus. I would say probably Sean Brock, who I worked for at Husk in Charleston. I would say that because he taught me to value the food that I grew up eating. I grew up in the South and I wanted to cook French food and Italian food. I didn't care about the food that my grandma made. I didn't care about the food where I was from because that wasn't exciting. It wasn't elegant. And to have a chef teach me that, yes, like the things that I grew up with, my traditions and my culture were also valid, was really huge for me.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
We're going to have Sean on the show later next month.
Oh, awesome.
So we'll chat.
Tell him I said what's up.
Appalachia as well.
Yeah.
More about wellness, I think, that show. But
yeah.
I'm excited. You're a minority, I think, when it comes to Kickstarter success, especially for restaurants.
Yeah.
Right. You don't see a lot of restaurants. You don't see a lot of food businesses on Kickstarter.
Right.
Give us your one line quote for other people interested in doing Kickstarter.
Like my advice?
Yeah, your advice.
Don't offer dollar for dollar food rewards.
So, yeah, the chicken bucket, I think, is like $300. No, I'm just kidding. How much was the chicken bucket?
Oh, my God. I actually don't even remember,
right.
Which is sad. But
people don't care. They want a barrier
right.
That's at their price point to be
right.
Able to support you
right.
And have some sort of reward, right?
Exactly. So you have to have some kind of price inflation because you actually need to have that money count towards something instead of just handing it right back as soon as you get your doors open.
Right.
Yep.
Biggest oh, shit moment when you opened Yonder and Mac?
Ooh. I am still having oh shit moments every single day. I had an oh shit moment this morning during brunch when I was like, oh my God, I have to leave the restaurant right now. Biggest oh shit moment was probably realizing all of a sudden that there was no one above me to turn to. That I was the one. I was the only person. Like, oh, the sink is broken? Cool.
It's your job.
Oh, the AC is not working? Okay. Oh, like two of my cooks called out today. Okay. You have to do everything.
Right.
So I would say... Yeah, I mean, like, I think a week in, I was like, holy shit, I can't ask anybody for anything.
Yeah, welcome to ownership.
Yeah,
right?
It's fun.
at the end of our show, we always do, like, a couple other opening soon announcements, and so this one we'll do specifically for Portland.
Cool.
I think May is four to 6 weeks old, so that counts.
That's true.
Any that you know of that are brand new in Portland?
How brand new is brand new?
4 weeks or so, I think.
4 weeks or so.
Yeah. Fresh.
Oh, God.
Or coming soon. Anything in the next couple weeks? Any friends that you know that you want to shout out?
Oh, yeah. Fermenter. I haven't been to Fermenter yet, but I'm really excited to go. My friend Aaron Adams is a really rad chef. He's also a vegan chef who approaches food with really bold flavors. He has a restaurant here called Farm Spirit that's like vegan, fine dining, really beautiful. But Fermenter is his like casual lunch counter where I think it has like 4 seats and you go and you sit down and you're like, here's $25. And he's like, cool, here's a 3-course, super bomb, like really nourishing, beautiful vegan lunch.
Sounds
so
amazing.
So I'm super excited to go to Fermenter. I feel like the other openings here
it's
recently...
It's open now, Fermenter?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. But I feel like everybody else opened kind of like 6 months ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
We've got a couple of lovely Rita just switched over at the Hoxton.
That's true.
From the Submarine Group, and they also have Sicoria that's coming soon. And then I was lucky enough to kind of to walk through the Kex Hotel, which is a Icelandic hotel that's going to be making its way into Portland in the next few months, and they have a restaurant called Vivian that's going to be opening up.
Oh.
Thank you so much for being here and chatting with us.
My pleasure.
On opening soon at Feast Portland. We're super stoked that you are here. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network on tour, presented by Le Creuset. Thanks again to our supporters at Le Creuset, Travel Portland, Salt and Straw, and the Julia Child Foundation for making our coverage possible. If you're looking for us, you can find us at We Are Opening Soon and at Till It NYC, and you can also find us, obviously, on Heritage Radio Network, as well as your podcast app. Where can we find May and Yonder on social?
At Yonder PDX, at May PDX, and those are also our websites, so pretty easy to find.
Cool, thanks.
Yeah, thank y'all.
This program is powered by Simplecast.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.